Welcome to Day Zero Update for April 16th, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Braden Perkins.
Yeah, we've got not a big week this week.
Not really.
A handful of stories here. A couple of things that are pretty big, but nothing really too game-changing here or anything.
No, it was kind of slow week. Really, the only big thing we got was the final trailer for Tears of the Kingdom, which was awesome, and we'll get to it, but other than that, not really much else.
Yeah, it was like that, and there's a state of play for Final Fantasy 16.
Mm-hmm.
Got to see more of that game and some more gameplay stuff there versus story and like little clips of things that helped make that game be more easily understood. So, but yeah, a bunch of other stuff, but we'll get to that before we have to talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here with the games that I've been playing. First up, Dredge. This is an indie game that came out pretty recently. I think last week or so, from Team 17, and I forget what the studio itself is called, Black Salt Games, who has made, I don't know what else they've made, but this is basically a spooky fishing game, essentially, where you are controlling a ship, a fishing boat, essentially. And at the beginning of the game, you sort of crash into these rocks because it's so foggy that you're having trouble seeing. And yeah, your boat basically gets totaled, but you get rescued and wash up with this fishing town that sort of offers to give you a new boat in exchange for, you know, paying off the whatever the value is for it, I guess. They don't really seem to charge you too much. Initially, they're like, for every fish you sell us, we'll take, you know, a cut of that to pay it off. But at a certain point, I just paid off the rest of it. And what I had left was like $25, something like that. So it wasn't too much for what it was, especially considering sort of how much some of the things I've been working on acquiring recently have been costing me. But yeah, you get to start on this and they tell you like, hey, don't be out for too long after dark, because then you'll see the clock meter that they have sort of start showing a weird eye on it if you're out for too long, and as well as if you encounter certain weird things that go on, implying that there's a very kind of Cthulhu insanity thing kind of going on here, with the way that they talk about things in this area that I've been going. And especially I've run into a big weird sea creature that chases me in this one part of the map. If I'm not careful, though, luckily I've upgraded my engines a bit so that I can outrun it pretty easily as long as I'm not screwing around too much. Though the worst thing that happens is it does some damage to your ship and you pay a little bit to repair it when you get back to a dock. Or at least have a place that can repair it. But yeah, you're going to a lot of different docks around here. You start off in one town and there's like a dock across the way and this other little island. It's basically a bunch of these different islands kind of thing. And that is a cool, well-designed thing, map there. Because initially you're going to probably stick around the immediate area because it's a little bit sketchy, especially your equipment is a bit lacking in going through, be able to catch different kinds of fish. Because they label these different, you'll see like little bits of like activity in a little circle area for fish, and you'll see some outlines that can tell you like, hey, here's what you might be getting here, you know, some flounder or eels or bigger fish, whatever. But then yeah, the neat thing is like once you catch it, you're storing it on your ship in a very Resident Evil 4 style of like the attaché case, or you're fitting them in there with all these boxes on your ship. I don't know if I'm going to upgrade the ship and have more space, but so far the only thing I've been able to really upgrade are these different parts of the ship that you know, where you have your engines, or where you can attach different kinds of poles and other equipment for fishing, that kind of stuff. And I think on the front end, you can do lights so that you can see better in the dark, mm-hmm. and keep your mind from losing it when you're out in the dark, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you'll run into fish that are like L-shaped, or you know, longer straight pieces, or you get some that are small, like one block fish, some that might be like a 2x3 square kind of thing. And so you're dealing with all that. At a certain point, you get the ability to dredge, which pulls up equipment, or not equipment, but materials like wood, cloth, like some metal stuff that you can use. Mm-hmm. For your upgrades, and the upgrades are just a bunch of series of like, oh, this needs two of this, one of this, that kind of thing. And you can, as you get stuff, you can just deposit in there so that whenever you fill it out, you mm-hmm. can pay the cost to acquire the upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be like, oh, you can do this. That usually gets you like, oh, you have a couple of extra spaces for this spot on the ship for other poles, that kind of thing. So I had one that had, I think it's, what is it? I think it's three long pieces with two on the side. And so I essentially got a pole that is L-shaped, and then another one that's just two straight pieces. And those have different ranges for where they can go. They label them all like coastal and oceanic and shallow, and like there's volcanic and some other labels. You'll see them as you unlock different equipment for your ship, kind of thing. So for as much as it sounds like a spooky kind of, maybe it's not really scary in any way. It's like the most tense is just that monster chasing me. But yeah, you'll see some, if you're out at night, you'll see some weird, I've seen like these like red, like fog around the map. And sometimes mm-hmm. it'll kind of go in my direction. I think that just increases your insanity, I guess. I don't know. It's it's a bit weird the way it's all portrayed. You just start seeing an eye, and I guess it kind of gets a little bit bigger as you're getting closer. But as long as you sleep up till, I think, 6 a.m., you'll generally be fine. But yeah, you're kind of just going out, catching fish, whatever you can handle, collecting that kind of stuff. And you're getting quests from people in different areas that you're like, oh, I need, if you find this thing that's, you know, potentially over in this area, you know, bring it back. You'll get some research points, which is where you use to unlock equipment. That's a whole skill tree for that stuff. I do not have nets yet. I just have the ability for different kinds of engines, poles, and some crab crates that you can drop into the water. There's a whole thing for that. And yeah, it's really neat. It's kind of a chill game despite the aura that it has around it, but it's a lot of just going around, catching fish, bringing it back, selling it. There's some story stuff going on that's a little bit interesting. I'm curious to see where that goes. But, yeah, kind of for the most part, it's very chill. So that's been a fun thing I've been putting a few hours into here over the weekend. That's been fun. Also been playing Ghostwire Tokyo. I did a stream on this. I was hoping to play enough to get to the Spider's Thread content that's in the game. It requires you to finish the second chapter. But the second chapter is a lot longer than the first chapter. As I guess the second chapter is when they're like, hey, this is an open world game now. Mm. And so unveiling a lot of side quests and collectibles and all this kind of hallmark of open world games that the game that Ghostwire doesn't seem like it needed. Like, I could understand some side quest stuff and all that, but there's a lot of collectibles, and I don't know if this game really needed that. So much so that you even have your tower equivalents are these shrines that you go to cleanse that sort of reveal a bit of the map around them. Mm-hmm. For that kind of stuff, and you can fast travel between them.
Yep.
So that's a whole thing there. And yeah, like, going through this second chapter, I got through the third mission I'm still in the middle of, where it has me going around this sort of mall area that is sort of a big complex that's just kind of running you through different parts of it, despite it not feeling like the goal points where it's sending you to. Felt like it was going to be going around everywhere except for the mission being called something like the Killer Maze or something like that. I was like, oh, it's going to be a little tricky, but even with that, it's been a lot of weird stuff. And yeah, it's just kind of a weird game. It's solid for the combat, which is basically like your character is doing sort of, I think they're like weaving signs kind of stuff. It's a bit weird. I'm not 100% sure on the what it's called, but you're doing these like hand motions to do these different types of attacks, which are equivalent to types of guns, as they've explained it before, that the green wind attacks are like pistol shots. The water is like a shotgun shot, a widespread shot, and the fire is like a rocket launcher. And you also have a bow that you can do, I guess, more silent attacks, but I haven't really gotten a good feel for that yet. So still working my way through this, but the combat, it feels all right. You do have like a lock on with the left trigger, but it doesn't really feel super great to do fired a bunch of shots at these enemies.
Yeah, especially because the enemies themselves move very fast, but your actual attacks can be surprisingly slow.
Yeah, and you have to do an upgrade to get a dodge.
Yeah. And also the aiming itself, you can have kind of auto aim or lock on, but it's very imprecise.
Yeah, it's kind of a very soft lock on. Which is annoying in a way. I almost kind of wish it was more Souls-like, where it was a hard lock-on kind of system. But yeah, it just kind of feels a bit off in a way. And especially, I don't have the dodge unlocked yet, but I feel like there should be a bit better of a dodge just available by default.
Mm-hmm.
So I would get, since you're in first person, you don't always have the greatest awareness of where you're at. And so, like, one of the first times I was fighting these big ladies with sword or scissors that charge at you, I thought I had gotten, a bunch of space behind me when I was backing up, but ended up clashing with a wall and just got decimated really fast. So that's then she shows up again in another big fight with a bunch of enemies around, so, you know, that made that even more fun. So yeah, it's a game that's maybe is best put on easy.
Yeah, definitely.
I think I might be on normal.
Yeah, if you try to do this on like a harder difficulty, it's just going to frustrate you because the controls, the precision in the controls just isn't there.
Yeah, when I was trying to figure out ways to dodge around, even with what I had, I was doing a lot of just crouching. And like the run is not very good in the way it feels, that kind of stuff. It's just a weird game with a lot of weird systems and moves to it. Like there's a glide because you can get up on the rooftops and you can glide over to the other ones. And I'll tell you, it does not feel like a game that should have that move. Mm-hmm. And it does not feel good when you're doing it. I even upgraded it so you get like 3 seconds of it. And it's like, I have no clue what 3 seconds of gliding feels like. You know, it doesn't show you a meter, so it's kind of one of those weird games where it's like, it has a lot of stuff. It doesn't maybe surface the right kinds of information to you to let you know sort of how to do things, even though it has a lot of options for turning off UI stuff. So yeah, it's a pretty solid game, but it feels a lot like it misses the mark on some of it. But it's still pretty solid and definitely very spooky, especially like the first chapter, like, oh, let's go to this abandoned hospital where your sister's at. This definitely won't be spooky with half the lights on and weirdo, you know, Japanese folklore demons and such walking around. And also there's like stealth in this game that definitely doesn't feel great. I think the only ones I can do it on is the like Slenderman like creatures. And yeah, it's just, it's a lot of weird stuff. Like they threw a lot of stuff in it. It has an Assassin's Creed level of open worldness to it. Even though the open world isn't really that big. Whenever I saw, you know, markers, they're like, oh, this is 300 meters away. It never felt like it was as far away as it actually seemed like it would be. So it's a fairly tight city for all that. So I'll probably play it some more, but I'm not like super enthusiastic about it or anything. But let's see. Also been playing MLB The Show 23. Enjoying that a lot. They've got a double XP weekend going on, so I've been playing a good bit of that. And it's also Jackie Robinson Day was yesterday. So all the games I was playing, all the players have their uniform number at 42 instead of whatever it is, which is part of that celebration. They also sell them a pack of some items for $5. You also get $5 worth of the in-game currency with that. So it's, you know, all bonuses and all the proceeds goes to the Jackie Robinson Foundation. So it's pretty well done for that stuff. So that's still been capturing a lot of my time for that. So yeah, that's been a lot of fun. And the last thing is I finally got around to doing a Wii U farewell stream yesterday. Played a bunch of Wii U stuff. And unfortunately couldn't play some of it because my Wii U has the issue that a lot of people found out there's have where the internal storage has corrupted because you're not, people have been trying to say it's because you didn't use it enough, and it's like, nah, it should work either way. It just seems like they probably cheaped out on the flash storage on this thing. And it can just decide at a certain point that it no longer wants to work. So any games I had installed on the internal storage does not work anymore. So that meant like I couldn't play Nintendo Land, or else it just crashes as soon as it starts. Let me see. I got my list here. New Super Mario Bros. U, which luckily I have on Switch. Pikmin 3, which is also on Switch. Super Mario 3D World, which is also on Switch. There's some smaller stuff here, like Assassin's Creed 3, Call of Duty Black Ops 2, which is like, I don't really care about those. I got a better version of Assassin's Creed 3 on my PS4. Game & Wario, can't play that anymore. And there's like a bunch of indie stuff on there. I can't play Wind Waker HD anymore, so I no longer have a version of that game that I can play. I can play Twilight Princess HD, which I don't really need to. That's the one of those two games I don't really care about as much. I like Wind Waker a lot more, but most of the other stuff seems to work just fine. I played a bunch of games on there. I played some Splatoon, the campaign stuff. That's still online. I was surprised to see that. What else did I play? Some Yoshi's Woolly World, which is still a cool game. That's not on the Switch. Captain Toad, that is on the Switch. Play some Dr. Luigi, which is from the year of Luigi that they tried to do. So they said, like, hey, what if we make Dr. Mario again, but it's Luigi, and so we'll give him L-shaped pills that he can put into the thing. And let me tell you, that's a way to fuck up with your general Dr. Mario strategy with that stuff. Play some Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, which is not on Switch, and that is not going to be on Switch because that is a very touch focused game. Twilight Princess HD is perfectly fine. But I was also in a part where I had to figure out where to go, and that made for a really good section of the game to just run around. And I got to Hyrule Field, and it turned into night, and so that meant a bunch of enemies are just chasing me. Mm-hmm. But conveniently, Link is the fastest person in Hyrule, so he can outrun every enemy, at least the ones I ran into. Let's see, what else did I play here? I played Nano Assault Neo, which is one of the early eShop games that was pretty neat from Shinen Entertainment. What else? Fast Racing Neo, which was a very F-Zero style racing game, Wipeout style racing game. That is neat. I never played that before. That does have a Switch successor, like a sequel on there. I played some of the NES Remix stuff, which was cool. That's where they take like a bunch of bite-sized version of NES games to challenge you to beat them. And then they have some special challenges where they do remixes of those games or mashups with other games, that kind of stuff. Like there's one where it's like, here, play this Super Mario Brothers stage, but everything's ice. So it's really easy to slide around when you're trying to control yourself, that kind of stuff. Or here, play, I'm forgetting what the Excite Bike, but you have everything's dark except for the little cone in front of you for getting around obstacles, that kind of stuff. Then there's like Pushmo World that I liked a lot. That is, you know, a Wii U version of the games they put out in the 3DS that are very cool puzzle platformer stages of sorts. That should be on a Switch because those are really cool games. They did the some of the other stuff they did that were digital exclusives on 3DS and Wii U have gotten Switch ports, but not enough because they don't really do that stuff anymore. The smaller games. It's largely only like $40 and $60 games on the Switch for Nintendo, because those make the most money, I guess. And then I ended playing Severed, which is a Drinkbox Studios game, makers of, you know, Guacamelee, Tales from Space, Monster Blobs Attack, whatever that one's, Mutant Blobs Attack. But this one was a, what if they made a touch-focused like first-person dungeon crawler Metroid-like kind of game. And it's really fucking good. And I was surprised to see that it didn't have like a Steam release at any point, where you could use the mouse to do your swipes to attack enemies, that kind of stuff. But they designed the combat really well on that stuff. You know, you can do your big swipes on enemies to do attacks, but also they will generally block or dodge them at a certain point, and you kind of want to, you know, have restraint on that stuff. So that's a game that still holds up really well. It is on the Switch. I don't know how playable that is. I imagine that must be only a handheld playable game, but I could be wrong on that. But that was pretty much it. It was like 3.5 hours of playing a bunch of games. And yeah, the Wii U had a lot of cool games. Unfortunately, Nintendo has left a lot of games sitting on that thing and not brought them over, much like the 3DS is even worse for that stuff. We're starting to get some things on there, but, you know, not enough. But yeah, there you go. That's been pretty much all I've been playing. How about you, Brandon?
I finished the main campaign of Immortals Fenyx Rising last night, and I immediately decided to go ahead and buy the season pass because that game ended up being a lot of fun, and I kind of want to keep going. And, you know, because, you know, they're running a sale right now, the season pass was, like, really cheap. It was only, like, $10. And that's literally...
Yeah, that's Ubisoft.
Like, yeah, and it's all the DLC they put out so far, so it's basically all free expansions for just that small price. Like I said, as far as story is concerned, this game really is just therapy for the gods, the game, because pretty much the way that game, you know, ends up is Zeus finally realizes how big of a dick he is, that he's basically treated his children terribly, that he's constantly blaming other people for his own problems. And frankly, he shows that his dislike of humans is because, you know, mortals is because they reflect him far too much more than he cares to admit. But it's still the Olympian pantheon, meaning that, you know, they still barely tolerate each other most of the time. But they're getting better, I guess. So I finished that. And I gotta admit, that game actually gets fairly difficult towards the end. Not necessarily combat-wise, but, like, puzzle-wise. Because there's a lot of, like block puzzles and stuff where you have to, like, actively go out and hunt for, you know, various rocks and stuff that you can break apart into little pieces and then use to, you know, put on these plates and put enough on them so it'll activate. And, you know, it's still a lot really good, though. Highly recommend it. It's actually a lot of fun. And I'm going to be playing the DLC starting tonight. But anyway, but outside of that, I've also been playing a nice little political game here on my PC here called Suzerain. And for those of you who don't know what Suzerain is, it's a term for having a kind of diplomatic control or, direct, diplomatic control over particular regions. So, like, say a place is like a disputed territory, then say a neighboring country may have a suzerain over that territory. So basically the story is you are a guy who's recently been elected president of this sort of second-rate world power called Swordland. And Swordland is sort of vaguely analogous to modern-day Turkey. It's located in a part of the world where it's basically right in the middle of, like, you know, analogs of, like, Western Europe and Asia and the steppes and the Middle East and all that stuff, and you're, like, dead center in the middle of it. And you're coming into this, you know, position in a rather troubling time, because up to this point, the Republic of Swordland has essentially been in sort of turmoil pretty much since its founding. It was originally founded, you know, after going from a kingdom to a republic, but some of the old guard didn't like it, and the guy who was elected the first president was naively idealistic, I guess you could say, which eventually meant that there was an attempted coup that then led to a counter coup, which in turn led to a civil war, and eventually both sides of that civil war ended up losing when this military officer decides to step up and put them both down and reunify the republic under his own militaristic autocratic rule. He eventually, of course, dies, which means there are other people that take his place. And, you know, there are people who are trying to reform the constitution that guy founded, which was, you know, put all very autocratic in nature. But it's very slow going. And by the time you get into power, you're essentially sort of locked into a dispute between, like, basically three different factions. So the party that your character represents is called United Swordland, and it's basically a sort of big tent centrist party. And you are essentially, you have like three routes that you can go to. There's, you know, the reformist route, the dictator route, and the autocrat route. Autocrat does not necessarily equal dictatorship. It just means that you're intending to put more power into the executive branch while slowly decreasing the power of the other two without basically making yourself the dictator for life. But because of this, you're in your own party, you've already got like a bunch of factions you have to deal with. There's like the reformist faction, which are sort of to the party's left, and they're trying the liberal part, and they're trying to reform the constitution to be more democratic and, you know, decrease the power of the military. There's the old guard, which is like the conservative nationalist part, and they want to keep the status quo of the, you know, what's called Saulism, which is named after General Saul, the guy who was the dictator, whose ideology was like economically kind of center left, but socially and politically fairly authoritarian conservative. And then there's the far right, which on top of not only wanting to get rid of democracy entirely, they're also really big on hardcore social conservatism and minimizing the rights of this group called the Buddhists, who are basically the analogy to the Kurds. And then, of course, on top of that, you're not just the only party that's, you know, in the assembly. There's also the Freedom and Justice Party, which are like a center-left liberal party, which is kind of to the left of the reformist faction in your party. And then there's also the National Front, and you can probably take a wild guess what they want. And then there's also like parties that are not in the assembly, but also, you know, still have a significant effect on politics. And of course, there's also intra-government and intranational and supranational organizations and NGOs, stuff that's analogous to NATO and the World Economic Forum and the IMF and all this stuff. And on top of all that, you also have to deal with the fact that you're also having to sort of get a position between the two big rival superpowers, which is... you know, you got United Cortana, I mean, not Cortana, Quintana, which is essentially analogous to the Soviet Union. And then you have Tasia, which is basically analogous to the United States. United Quintana, of course, is specific about around the kind of their particular version of communism, which is called Malvanianism in this universe. And then, you know, they're also not like the only major communist power in it. There's another country called Fogland that's slightly ideologically different, but still like a huge ally to them on the geopolitical stage. But you also, you know, there's so inevitably you are going to get sort of pulled in between these two. And there it's impossible to, you know, not take a position. At some point, you are going to have to side with one of these two on some particular, you know, subject or issue. And I need to really make clear, this is not like a God game. You know, this is not like Black and White or Civilization or anything like that. No. You are limited to the powers of your office. And everything that you do is going to have some kind of reaction, for better or worse, from everyone else around you. And this game basically is like you are given this power, you are trusted with it, and you have to use your conscience on how you're going to follow through. And yeah, that's Suzerain. It's actually very low graphics intensive. Play it on my PC. It's very easy to play. It's also on Switch. I recommend it if that's the kind of thing you're into, because I'm certainly... Yeah, that's what I've been playing.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. Mm-hmm. And it is the middle of April, so we've got our PlayStation Plus game catalog lineup for April.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For the extra and premium tiers. And for extra, there is Kena, Bridge of Spirits.
Finally, I've been wanting to play this one.
Yeah, and this is one of those games where, stylistically, I would not be surprised if people think it's, you know, a Ratchet and Clank style action game kind of thing. But no, it is a very hardcore action game. Mm-hmm. Maybe not in the Souls kind of style, but definitely in the, you need to be on top of your shit or you're going to get fucked up.
Yeah.
In that game, especially some of the boss fights you run into early on. But it does have a lot of cool stuff with these little spirit dudes that you can give them hats that you purchase or find, that kind of stuff that is really cool. Yeah, it has a nice style to it and all that. So that's that we're checking. That's Kena Bridge of Spirits on the PS4 and PS5. Also for PS4 and PS5, Doom Eternal. Again, another game that will fuck you up if you're not, on top of your shit.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a game that probably might be best played on the easiest mode. Because I remember playing that and like barely getting through a level before just kind of giving up on it. Just not enjoying it the way I like the other Doom game, the prequel to this. That felt very evocative of the original Doom games in a lot of ways, stylistically, and the way they designed everything. Doom Eternal tries to go for more. And I feel like that was maybe its fatal flaw to it. Not that it's a bad game or anything, just...
It's still a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that game when I was playing it.
But
there's a lot happening. It can be very hard to keep all those mechanics in mind because the action is just so frantic.
Yeah, it's a game that really throws on a lot more systems to it. In a way that when I was seeing early gameplay, I was like, oh, this looks like Ratchet and Clank, but Doom. And that can be awesome, but it's not. But yeah, there's Doom Eternal. Let's see. Next up for PS5 and PS4, Riders Republic. Another Ubisoft game joining the lineup. One that probably most people didn't even bother buying. That is sort of the follow-up to, I forget what the snowboarding-ish game was, where they had a bunch of sort of snow sports you could deal with, skiing, snowboarding, some flight suit stuff and that kind of stuff. This is all more, BMX racing, motorcycles, flight suits. I guess it also has some snow stuff as well in it. Kind of set in more of, I guess they say, American national parks like Bryce Canyon, Yosemite Valley, and Mammoth Mountain, stuff like that, but also has options for some big PvP races with up to 50 people in there. So kind of a neat style to it. Just one of those games that definitely looked neat before launch, and everyone's like, yeah, but not, I'm not going to buy it. So there you go for that. We got for the PS4, Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus, the second of the reboots of Wolfenstein games, where the Nazis have taken over America.
Yeah.
BJ has been taken out of commission for a while and comes to find out all of what's going on here and joins the resistance to end the Nazis' occupation of America and all that. That's pretty neat.
I reviewed this game back when it came out, and it's a lot of fun. If nothing else, then you basically get an excuse to mutilate Nazis. You can even step on Hitler's head. That's an automatic 10-10 best game of the year for me.
Let's see here. For the PS4, Slay the Spire. A very good card battling game. We are going through the, this big sort of tree of potential matches, building up your deck to try to, take down these enemies, eventually beat a boss and move on to a new area kind of thing as you try to get as far as possible. And then you start unlocking a couple other classes. They have their own ways of doing things that is pretty cool, and it's a very cool one of those games. So that's definitely worth checking out. Let's see, PS5 and PS4, Monster Boy and the Cursed Kingdom. This is a new game from the creator of the original Wonder Boy in Monster World series. Sort of bringing a lot of that kind of style and gameplay to it, with a new kind of cartoony art style that you can do now in the modern day of HD cartoon kind of look to it. So that's pretty cool. For PS4, there's The Evil Within. Some more Bethesda stuff here. So there's that. Then there's Wolfenstein The Old Blood for the PS4. That's the standalone prequel to the first person action adventure shooter, Wolfenstein The New Order. That's sort of standalone spin-off game of sorts. That has its own story, that kind of thing. But there's that. For PS5 and PS4, Bassmaster Fishing, So yeah, an official Bassmaster fishing game. So that could be neat. For PS5 and PS4, Paradise Killer. That game's really cool. That is a big open world murder mystery game.
Yep.
Where you are on an island. It's filled with deities.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're trying to talk to people, learn, you know, things about the people in the world around you, and try and figure out who the culprit of the crime, or the culprit that committed the crime that you're trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
So that's a very cool game.
Yeah.
And also joining for PS5 and PS4, Sackboy: A Big Adventure. So they're also giving that to Extra. Mm-hmm. As well, for the people that have that.
Yep.
So the people have a little more permanent access to that. So that's cool. The premium tier is a bit of a weird one, where it's all the classic Doom games. Mm-hmm. Doom, Doom 2, Doom 64, and Doom 3 that are on the PS4. And I guess Dishonored Definitive Edition.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot more Bethesda stuff than I was expecting, especially none of these are PS1 or PSP games. The other part of premium is sort of remasters, I guess, that they put on there for that stuff. So that's, I guess, filling out some more of that as Bethesda gets some more stuff on there, which I've seen people like, oh, this is what they're doing to for the Activision merger. It's like, no, this would not be any part of that. They're not, Sony's not like, oh, we'll let you acquire Activision Blizzard if you put some of your games on our subscription service.
Yeah.
Bethesda's been doing this stuff for a while. They had a bunch of stuff on PlayStation Now back in the day before they merged into PlayStation Plus. We're still missing some of those games that got taken out when they relaunched the PlayStation Plus.
Yeah.
Stuff like Wet that were on the PS3 streaming stuff. But yeah, pretty solid lineup there. Of a lot of cool stuff.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that is neat. I guess I think people have been freaking out about, there's some games coming out of the lineup on May. May 15th. That includes Resident Evil, NBA 2K Playgrounds 2, and I guess Marvel's Spider-Man, the PS4 versions of that.
Hmm.
Of the original game. So people have been upset about that. Which I get, but also, I don't know. I think it'll come back at some point.
Yeah. All
right. But yes, speaking of subscription services, Ubisoft has one that they'd like you to subscribe to on the Xbox.
Ubisoft, yeah, of course.
Multi-access.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked into this. This is the highest tier that they have on PC, which lets you access these games on PC and Luna, which you might not remember what that is. That's Amazon Luna, Amazon's streaming service that is also very weird. Because it has like channels you can subscribe to amongst that stuff. So Ubisoft has a bunch of stuff on there for that. So you can have sort of local PC games and streaming PC games. But the basic tier on Ubisoft Plus is $15, but they're not offering that here for Xbox. It has to be the multi-access that gets you PC and streaming stuff, even if you can't really access that. Because you would need a PC, I believe, to access that stuff. Maybe mobile for Luna? I'm not 100% sure what Luna's availability is, but yeah, their PC games, especially more recent stuff, definitely requires a beefy PC to be able to enjoy. And they have a list here of all that stuff, but yeah, it's $18 a month to subscribe to it on the Xbox end of it. And that will get you games at launch. The other weird wrinkle is that Ubisoft has a number of games where the Ultimate Edition, which is generally what you would be getting here, that gets all the DLC and all that when it comes out, that sometimes has a different save file to the base game. So if you are playing, you know, what is essentially, I think, like Assassin's Creed Mirage will be the next big Ubisoft game release. If you get the Ultimate Edition and, you know, stop subscribing and, like, want to get the regular edition when it's on sale to continue, you might not be able to. You might have to start over despite, you know, paying $18 for this stupid service and not have they have a cross save system internally for their Ubisoft network, but it doesn't always work for every game or between versions. It's weird. So that's going to be an additional subscription fee. It's not a part of Game Pass, as a lot of people assumed it would be, which wasn't a huge surprise. They're not going to give away Ubisoft games on Game Pass. But yeah, the PlayStation solution, which is that they have Ubisoft Plus Classics on there, which is a lot of the games that are on here. The older stuff, like Riders Republic, I think is the newest game they put on there. And that's still like 2 years old or a year and a half old, something like that. I think we're still missing like Far Cry 6 and some other stuff like that. So, yeah. That seems like a service like you might pay for a month here and there to check out a new game or whatever, to be cheaper than whatever you're doing before. But also Ubisoft games go on sale real cheap pretty quickly. So for $18, you can probably get some of those new games within about 6 months or so. For a pretty good price. So, yeah. So there you go. New way to check out Ubisoft games that may not make much sense for you, depending on how you play them. But yeah, we got some good news here. Power Wash Simulator, the devs at Future Lab, have announced their roadmap for the rest of 2023 of releases, and that includes a physical version that will be launching... when is that? June 13th for Xbox, PS4, PS5, and Switch. The Switch version seems like it's not on the cartridge. It requires a download.
Yeah.
It might be just a code. I'm not 100% sure. Yeah, there's no game card, just a code for that. So, yeah, there you go. But the first big content here is version 1.2 called the Muckingham Files. That'll be out April 18th here on Tuesday. That will add some new story stuff to the game. As I say here, players may remember the mysterious Mauka Aitu Desert from jobs in the base game, where they were tasked with cleaning an ancient statue, an imposing monument, and an old steam train. Well, it's just not full of aged relics, but also home to some more advanced technology. Namely, a solar water plant and a huge satellite dish. Down to you to dust off all that sand for a satisfying sparkly finish. A short reprieve from the dry, dusty desert will transport players back to the lush green of Muckingham's recreation ground, where a filthy food truck is spoiling the view. Once you finish, it'll be shimmering centerpiece of the park. And for those looking to brush up on local lore, pre-existing bonus jobs have had new stories added that supplement... while not continuing the main story, bring them in line with this update and any future updates to the Muckingham universe, so you can replay them for more tales and trivia from your favorite filthy town, as they call it. But that's the only stuff that has been detailed just yet. They have part of this as well, paid DLC coming each quarter for Q2, Q3, and Q4. The recent Final Fantasy VII and Tomb Raider packs have been released as like free DLC for these things, and those games that section of the menus has a link to the storefront on, you know, whatever version you're playing to potentially buy other stuff, and I think that's where that stuff is going to fit. But yeah, they also have free content in those quarters as well, so that's good. And they also have a mysterious square called Exciting News in Q3, which does not have a lot of details on that. So I assume that'll be something neat. People are like, oh, make it VR. Add VR to this game. Who knows what it's going to be, but it's cool to see they got more stuff coming for this game, especially somebody that's still playing it. So, yeah, there you go. More Power Wash Simulator coming soon on Tuesday.
Awesome.
Yeah. So there you go. We got a couple other dates here. It's nothing been too much in the way of big stuff, but this one's pretty neat. Stray Gods, the role-playing musical, will be out on August 3rd on PC. It's a narrative-driven adventure and interactive musical game that'll be coming out from Humble Games and developer Summerfall Studios. This got announced, I forget when, maybe last year at some point, but this looks pretty cool. It's it's set in a modern fantasy world where the Greek gods live hidden among us. Grace is granted the power of a muse to draw others into musical numbers, power that she'll need to find out the truth behind her predecessor's death before time runs out. Unravel the mystery of the last muse through your choices in a beautifully hand illustrated role-playing musical. You know, the art style kind of has the similar style to like the Wolf Among Us, Telltale kind of animated series to it, but also has a bunch of big names doing voice work for it. Laura Bailey is in there, Mary Elizabeth McGlynn. I think I saw Rahul Kohli is in here, and a bunch of others are in there as well. So, this comes from David Gator, lead writer and creator of the Dragon Age world, I guess. So,
all right. Hey, I'm all for trying new stuff, so I hope it ends up being good.
Yeah, we need more musicals and games.
Yeah.
There haven't been very many of those. I think the, that second Mickey Mouse game, I forget what the game was called. It wasn't very good, but it had like musical stuff in it. That was neat, but the game itself just didn't do super well.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a style of thing that could be really cool. I think from the gameplay I saw of it, you're going to have choices you can make during the song that changes the lyrics and such. So that's neat if that works out pretty well. But yeah, here next up, Dreams. Media Molecule has announced the end of their full support for the game. As far as, you know, releasing updates and such for the game. After, I think, 4 years of this, of working on it, they say that September 1st is going to be the end of their live support. They have announced a bunch of stuff that's going to be changed with the updates to set it up for its, you know, the next phase of its life. As far as, you know, people's ability to upload new content and keep it stored on the servers, and they're trying to keep it all pretty simple as far as, you know, what you can do so that you understand what all is going on there. So they have a big blog post on their site for that with all the details to check out. So it's a shame that that wasn't a bigger game, but people made a lot of cool stuff with that, and they've said, you know, they're not going to be doing any further like game jams or big events or anything like that.
Yeah.
But all the ones they've done previously and all these sections dedicated to the content put up for that stuff will still be around. So you can all check it out, get inspiration from it and all that. So that's cool. Doing as much as they can for that game.
Yeah. It's sad, but you know, that game did, that particular program did get some really good stuff out of it. Very little of it obviously was up to the, you know, the professionally made game they included in it by like an actual professional team. But yeah, you could get some really good stuff out of it.
Yeah, a lot of Sonic fan games in there.
Oh yeah, a lot of Sonic fan games.
They're like, oh, we've solved all the problems that Sega couldn't do it. And it's like, yeah, without all the baggage, you can probably do some cool stuff. A lot better than some of the stuff I saw for, what was that, Game Builder Garage that Nintendo released? Like, I saw that there was some Sonic fan games people tried to do there, and it's like, yeah, none of that seemed to work out really well for that stuff, but Dreams did pretty well for that. But yeah, let's see. Next up here, Ravenlock, a game that I think got announced a little bit ago. This is from developer Coco Cucumber, who made, Echo Generation. that is a very cool sort of voxel RPG kind of game. This is their follow-up, Ravenlock, that's set in a fairy tale world, and is also an action RPG to it, but it has a very neat style to it. It'll be out May 4th for Xbox and PC. Will also be on Game Pass at launch, so that's neat. They say the inspirations include stuff like J.R.R. Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, and Studio Ghibli for some of the stuff they've done here. So that looks neat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, this is definitely my kind of thing. It definitely looks nice. It's still kind of, you can kind of tell it's still kind of in development, but yeah, it's got that kind of whimsical thing. And yeah, I can definitely see like the Ghibli influence in some of these screenshots. Like this last one right here is very away in look and feel. But yeah.
So there you go. That's one to keep an eye on. It'll be out in a couple of weeks here. So there you go. What won't be out in a couple of weeks? Suicide Squad: Kill the Justice League.
Yep, we knew that was coming.
Yeah, we heard word that they may be delaying it. What we didn't really expect is that it was going to be delayed till February 2nd, 2024.
Yeah.
A good 10 months, 9 months there.
Yeah.
That has, given them a lot of time for bringing, doing a lot of polish and extra work on that game. I don't think that's going to be enough time to make any big changes. So if your complaint is that, it's got, live service stuff in it, they're not going to be able to really rip that out. I don't think so. And overhaul any parts of the game, really. And they're going to work on making it, as good of a game as they can. In spite of the internet's wishes that they would just shut it down and die, essentially, for that. So, yeah, a shame. But people are mad that, they've been working on this game for, several years now. And it's like, yeah, that happens with games. Sometimes you just work on a bunch of stuff and nothing really gets to the next level of full development. Just because Rocksteady is a beloved developer doesn't mean that, they're immune to any of the issues that everybody else can run into.
Yeah, exactly.
So I try and tell people, don't treat developers like deities. They're humans like
especially when they're attached to a corporation like Warner Brothers.
Yeah. So that's been fun to see people complaining about all this. And it's like, I don't know. You guys are complaining so much you caused them to delay the game significantly. So you're getting what you want outside of them just shutting down this game, canceling this game, and then taking 5 more years to make something else. Like, nothing that's going to happen here is going to make anybody happy. I don't know if this is even like the Halo Infinite situation, where it's like that game looked like it was clearly not ready to launch alongside the console. This just seems like it's going to be maybe not the most amazing game ever made. It looks pretty solid for what it was.
Yeah.
In that state of play, but there's very much a vocal part of the internet that doesn't want live service games. And once that, like, everybody else hates it, and it's like, no, you should look at what the most popular games in the world is.
Yeah. Live service games can be okay, ethically, which I admit is a pretty low bar, but
yeah,
it can be done.
But yeah, it's a matter of how much time you're acquiring of the player to, earn a decent amount of stuff. Some people get really wrapped up in how much money does it take to get everything? And it's like, you're not going to get everything in, games like this. Like nobody complains how much time it takes to get all this stuff in Diablo. Yeah. And it's like, that's because you're not expecting to. Though people definitely did that for Diablo Immortal, somebody spending a lot of money on whatever crates or whatever they had, and being outraged at what that came out of. It came out as so. Yeah, there you go for that game. But yeah, for games that are coming out pretty soon, we got a state of play showing off about 25 minutes of Final Fantasy 16. Mm-hmm. That looked pretty good. I really wasn't 100% sure exactly what like gameplay of that game was going to be like. We hadn't really seen too much of like, you know, good chunks of gameplay to really get an idea of what the whole game was going to be. We knew the combat was going to be more action oriented because they have the combat designer from the Devil May Cry games.
Oh yeah.
And it definitely is that.
Mm-hmm.
To which I think the guy that's, you know, the combat designer has been like, yeah, this is actually better than DMC.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, talk your shit, dude, because you're the one that made that combat that people, you know, say is the best out there. So
mm-hmm.
I guess it could be good. Could be good and all that. So, but they showed off a bunch of other stuff like Clive's Hideout, which is sort of your base camp area where all the people you meet sort of hang out and you can do all your crafting and managing your storage and side quests and all this mm-hmm. stuff. And they also mentioned that there are mob hunts, which are sort of tougher missions to go on. Mm-hmm. It has like a hunt board, you know, in the like Final Fantasy 12 kind of vein of mm-hmm. that. Let's see. Yeah, they're talking about more people that show up and offer you more lore about the world and all that, because that's a big thing they have for this game is sort of all the lore around the world, that kind of stuff. So much so that like you go do stuff for this dude. Yeah, it says like Harpocrates, is that what the hell this name is? He's a lore's man. I was very curious about Clive's stories he takes home from his adventures. As Clive shares his past experiences, Harpocrates gains new knowledge as a researcher, and the thousand tomes in which he keeps record of his knowledge have become more and more complete. And so, yeah, it like levels up his lore, I guess. And then that shows like classic Final Fantasy style sprites there. But then it keeps track of all this stuff that goes on. So it's a very kind of, you know, encyclopedia kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's Vivian, the military scholar, which is also another sort of lore person who's well versed mm-hmm. in the affairs of the countries of Valisthea and gives mm-hmm. Clive lectures at various points in the story.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk to her in the hideout. So if you want lore, this game seems well designed to give it to you.
I mean, I like lore. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's lore when they describe it as getting lectures.
Yeah.
But yeah, they also shut off more of the combat. So you got all that, which has a lot of cool, you know, person-to-person combat, as well as the sort of, I think what they call them, icons. Mm-hmm. I forget what they call the big dudes. Because they're not summons. Yeah, they're icons. E-I-K-O-N-S.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, they have to do a pun name for it, but that's the big combat that kind of reminds me a bit of, like, God of War, mm-hmm. The older God of War games, where you just had some big fucking dudes you're fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that looks neat.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely looks interesting, and that'll be out, I think, June 22nd, 26th. What was the date they gave here? 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
So towards the end of June there. So that looks neat. So yeah, there's that. And then we also got the last trailer for The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, which finally like shows some more things.
Oh yeah.
That we've been wanting to see, which I guess Ganondorf is in there. That is a big deal. And he's very... Yeah. And people are hot for him.
Mm-hmm. Because, of course, they are.
Yeah. And I guess that they have him voiced by Matt Miller, I think it's. Mm-hmm. I forget what. Who has done a bunch of voice acting and a bunch of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably know of him. And you saw some lines in that trailer. They showed off some more gameplay stuff. I Still don't know if they show any like shrines or anything like that.
I mean, they definitely show like some larger areas that seem to imply something closer to like dungeons or temples.
Yeah. But
you know, they might still be there. We just don't see them. You know, remember, this is Nintendo we're talking about. Just because you see it doesn't mean that it's not going to be there in the final product. So,
yeah, but also, it's Zelda, like when Breath of the Wild was getting announced and all that, they did a big whole thing at E3 where they played through that whole big first area. And sort of talked a lot about the things you could do there and a lot of that. So, yeah, they're doing the opposite approach here.
Yeah.
Where we haven't really seen somebody playing the game.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's kind of an interesting approach because, obviously, it's a sequel to Breath of the Wild, so a lot of it's going to be similar.
Yeah. I mean, it's still very much going to be an extension of Breath of the Wild. As far as like a story is concerned, a lot of people are making guesses. I'm kind of assuming from what we've seen that this is basically going to be, you're basically going to be playing the same Link as you did in Breath of the Wild. It's just like a few years later, you know.
He's now passed out again.
Yeah, now that Zelda's back in the picture, you know, Hyrule kind of getting around to sort of rebuilding itself now. You know, they're making connections with each other again, like we saw that Gerudo encampment outside of the castle. We saw, you know, a bunch of village, you know, thriving villages and stuff. And we also saw like some of the returning champions from the first game. You know, they're there. You know, Sidon is there, and you know, the other ones. And apparently, they're going to actually be joining you at some point. Like, this isn't going to be a one-man show anymore. There's going to be points where you're actually going to have, like, a party, which is kind of neat. We also got, like, a big tech is working here. We saw, like, you know, attaching, like, those turbines to, like, the back of, like, mine carts and having, like, an archery fight on the back of them. You know, we saw that, which looked really cool, I got to admit. And then we saw, like, they're taking the sort of tech to, like, its logical conclusion by you basically can construct these big battle machines and fight, you know, enemy battle machines.
Yeah, they made it seem like the encampments could be, you had some, like, treehouse stuff in Breath of the Wild. And it's like, what if you just had that on a thing that moves around?
Yeah.
Where it's like Mad Max Fury Road.
Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, I that's cool. I can dig it. Let's see what else. We got some images of what look like some new characters, including some dragon looking fellow. I have heard that this guy is supposed to be related to. I'm not going to say it because it's completely up in the air. And this is Nintendo, and I could be full of shit. We do see what look like some of that that weird sort of mysterious primordial race that apparently was originally the Hyrule. We see at least someone like them or dresses like them. We see just so many cool things. Apparently, according to Nintendo, you start this game actually on one of those big floating sky islands. And then come down to Hyrule after you finish that area. So it's kind of like Skyward Sword. I'm also not entirely convinced that there isn't some sort of like Twily stuff happening in the background. Because I definitely saw some stuff that reminded me of like, oh, this is like the Twilight area from Twilight Princess. I said it when I saw it and I'll say it again. I want this game and I want it now. You know?
Yeah.
As I get my next paycheck, I'm pre-ordering it.
Yeah, it seems pretty neat.
Yeah. And, you know, just getting to see all the new mechanics there and how we can break them. Like, that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
Because they've added some significantly neat stuff, and I just want to see how far people can take it.
Yeah. Yeah, so... Yeah, there you go. For that, we got a couple more stories here. Redfall is supposed to be out here, I think, May 2nd.
Yeah.
And it's definitely getting to be a weird launch for this game.
Yeah.
Because they announced on Twitter that they are launching with only a quality mode.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that it's a 30 FPS mode on Xbox Series X and S.
Yep.
4K 30 on Xbox Series X and S gets 1440p 30. No 60 FPS performance mode until sometime after launch. They've not given a time frame for that either. Mm-hmm. This has definitely caused the word of mouth around this game to kind of take a nosedive, as people are wondering sort of what have they been doing for all of this time, because it's been delayed a few times at least.
Mm-hmm.
And how are they launching this with only a 30 FPS mode here in 2023, where everybody's expecting, you know, at least a performance mode, if it's not, you know, a rock solid 60 FPS, something that's at least going to get you close to that.
Mm-hmm.
As I think like God of War and Gran Turismo 7 and, you know, Horizon Forbidden West, all have stuff like that. That's, you know, here's the first big, budget game for Microsoft in 2023 for the first time in a while.
Yeah.
We haven't seen anything from them on this kind of budget and scale in not Infinite, I don't think. Maybe it was Halo Infinite, but I can't remember what the... Because like Pentiment obviously wasn't a frame rate game that you'd be obsessed about. Hi-Fi Rush, yeah. But also those are smaller budget games. It's like $30. They're charging $70 for this game.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
It's just weird.
It's weird. It's extremely weird.
Yeah. And it's like, a lot of people are like, oh, then I'll wait till it's hits 60 at that when that update comes out. And it's like, yeah, it seems like Microsoft is not that stingy with having games launch as well as possible. Because they still update a lot of their games with new content. You know, Sea of Thieves, Halo Infinite still gets stuff. Even with them laying off people at 343 and all that. So, yeah. Especially for Redfall, where, you know, it's another big Bethesda game where we haven't even really seen a big budget Microsoft game in a while.
Yeah.
Because Bethesda's been carrying them for a while with Ghostwire Tokyo and Deathloop and now this and Hi-Fi Rush.
Mm-hmm.
They've been the bulk of the Microsoft machine carrying that gaming branch for most of the past year or two. So, yeah. It's just very weird. I'll probably still check it out, but I'm continually like having my interest lowered a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It was already pretty low because it's a vampire game, like a spooky vampire game, which I'm not. Vampires are a thing I'm not really that into so much. Outside of like Castlevania, where that's really goofy kind of spooky stuff. And of course, there's Vampire Survivors, which has no vampires in it.
Yeah.
So that technically counts as a non-vampire game, despite the title.
Mm-hmm.
Though I just saw that the Renfield movie.
Yeah.
That just came out. They made a game for it that is a Vampire Survivor style game.
Of course they did.
It's like $5 and I'm like, what? People are saying it's actually really good, so I don't know what's going on anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's get to our last story here. Nintendo announced an event for later this year called Nintendo Live 2023.
Mm-hmm.
An in-person fan event that will be taking place in Seattle in September.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be neat. People are trying to hype it up. It's like, oh, this is going to be like E3. And it's like, I would encourage you not to do that to yourselves. This looks like, you know, like what PlayStation Experience was. It's like a fan convention thing. This seems like it's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
As they describe here, with fun gameplay, live stage performances, exciting gaming tournaments, memorable photo ops, and more. Mm-hmm. You know, inviting all members of the family to come together, play, and have fun. Mm-hmm. So they'll have, you know, they say, attendees will experience a wide variety of Nintendo game-inspired events across a large-scale themed area. Mm-hmm. People of all ages and gaming experiences are encouraged to attend, since the experience is designed with both families and fans in mind. Whether you are a lifelong Nintendo enthusiast who knows your likes from your Lakitus, what the fuck is that pun there? Or someone new to the world of Nintendo, everyone is invited to have fun.
I want this to do well, but I can only see this being an absolute train wreck.
I think it'll be just kind of a milquetoast fan event.
I hope, you know, that that's the worst it is.
But you know how people are with directs, they expect that this will have like E3 level announcements or something, and I don't know that that's going to be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I looked it up. Likes. That's a little dumb thing out of the ground that like follows you around. Okay. Just saying likes doesn't make a sense as a term. Obviously, Lakitus are the flying dudes with the camera in 64. Mm. Then in like Super Mario Brothers throws fucking spike shells at you.
Yeah.
So, yeah. This seems like an event that like Dan Ribb will find himself at just to see what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't mention pricing or anything in this, so it might be free to attend. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think there's any. Well, they send you to a web page. Let's see what's on this web page. More info coming soon. Okay, thank you, Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
5 months away, and you're saying, we'll tell you later.
Mm.
There's not even specific dates, it's just says September.
Mm.
Yeah, so, yeah, it seems fairly milquetoast for things they've done in the past. But I guess they'll probably have some of the characters they would have, you know, in suits for E3 or GDC or whatever will be there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess from the Nintendo Land they probably would have there. So
yeah,
there you go. And that's going to do it for the show this week.
Yep.
As I said, there wasn't a ton, but
we
did our best. May is almost at an end. We got two more shows for this month, and then we'll get to even more games coming out. As May and June are full of games for people to obsess about. So there you go. But yeah, thank you to Brandon for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know that they should check it out, as well as select friends who would not make jokes like comparing likes to Lakitus. Exclude those people from anything you're doing in the future.
Seriously. Shun the bad pun maker. Shun them.
Yeah, so... Yeah, there you go. But yeah, we'll be back next week with a new show. And yeah, we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.